Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
And you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing. We're here with you every Friday afternoon live across all of our social channels, streaming at 3 o'clock on youtube.com/offtheball, facebook.com/offtheball, and of course on Twitter and on Periscope as well. And then if you miss that, don't worry, you can always get us on the radio every Friday evening from 8 o'clock. Dennis Hogan is our special guest this week. Dennis, you're very welcome. Thanks very much for coming into us.
Thanks, Jared. Yeah, pleasure.
Also with us is Johnny. Johnny, how are you?
Yeah, he's come all the way from New York to join us here.
Very good.
Yeah, literally straight from the plane.
A bit of jet lag?
Yeah, well, a little bit, Jared. It's been a long day, actually, yeah. We've been...
It's kind of yesterday, is it?
Yeah, into today. We've been home from Shannon to home, gabbed a few. Well, I watched two lots at home and we gabbed a couple of horses on the corridor before I got up here. So, yeah, it's sleep tonight.
Was that pure pleasure or was there a bit of work involved? Or
No, it was actually originally I was supposed to be over on last Saturday for a Tipperary GA ball.
Right.
That was on and I was disappointed to miss it, but we had such a good bunch of horses running the weekend and a couple of the good mares were running, so I stayed around and we changed flights to Monday and came back this morning. So
So you were going to go over for a ball. You couldn't make the ball, but you went over to New York anyway.
We went anyway, yeah. Yeah. Well, Johnny, we don't
that get... That is my type of logic, actually, to be fair. Like, yeah, any time of year in New York's a good time to go, like.
Yeah, for sure. But we didn't... it's our season has changed a lot because I suppose when I was just riding, the summer was always the time for a holiday. And even when I started training, it was always just that time in the summer will get quiet, but now that we have so many flat horses and the jump sales run through all the quiet periods for jumping, and it's just never ending, you know.
Yeah. This is the central part of this conversation should be you're the hardest working man in horse racing, so you don't have an off season. This is
I literally don't actually, but look, it's great way to be, but you can make a bit of time around again. It takes a bit of planning though.
I'd say so, yeah.
To get a few hours off in the day is hard, but...
For people who aren't full-blown horse racing aficionados, you are a jockey and a trainer.
Yeah, that's correct.
There's a curious blend of madness in that.
But they say, like, you shouldn't be a player manager anymore, that you can't do both, and yeah. You're probably one of the only... There is a kind of a parallel there. You're probably one of the only few that really does it, like.
Yeah, it's different. Very different, actually, and... Yeah, it's there's two sides, but obviously, but we, like, I'm not riding them all anymore. We've a lot of flat horses and a few pointers, and it's not the end of the world nowadays if I don't ride one. But I do like to ride them, and
yeah.
I'm not looking for spares in the beginners chases anymore. Anything, but at the same time, if a nice ride came up, I'd take it. You know.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy the riding, and obviously it's hard to juggle too. But I have a great team of staff, and that's what makes it like. Just to get a few days away, and even tonight, like they're headed up to Dundalk there, and like they know the drill better than myself, and like I nearly get in the way now when I'm there. Actually, they're so good at it, and a good team at home, and you know, there's just nothing missed.
Why don't we start at the start, the bit where you decide you want to be a jockey? Because you're not from a stereotypical traditional racing background, are you?
No, but grew up farming background, but grew up very. Next door to Charlie Swan.
Okay.
And it kicked off from there. He opened the riding school, I think, was he finished riding? No, he was still riding, but he opened the riding school, and myself and my sister would have started riding lessons there, and I went from there into the racehorses and pony racing, and it stepped on a bit further. You know?
This is like 12, 13, 14, that age, kind of the impressionable age when you're like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And it's not like, you know, Charlie Swan was unbelievably famous at that stage in Irish sports culture, like,
yeah,
when we didn't have a load of Cheltenham winners, any of the Cheltenham winners we had, it was like, wow, that's a celebrity, basically.
And it was Issabrack a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Charlie was a national legend at the time, and I suppose then being local to us, we always followed him, and it built a bit from there, and I managed to get a job with him. He started me off in racing. He then got me a job at Michael Halford on the Curra, which I learned a lot. And that was a massive benefit to my career.
Were you even thinking then about training or?
No, at the time, but I did in them years keep ponies for pony racing, and I would have trained them as well. Got a lot of help from Charlie and a lot of the lads in the yard. And from there, No, I didn't think. I really enjoyed working in McAlford's on the Curragh. We're in Pollardstown then, in his old yard, but...
Did that make you think more, like, geez, I wouldn't mind doing this, like...
Yeah. I was, like, still to this day, I think Michael Halford is a, like, international top trainer. Mm. He's, like, he's... just the way he done... In them years, he had horses who... He had a lesser type of horse in them years. Like, that's 12 years ago. And, like, there was horses there, you'd think, God, he's not going to win much, but Mick would chip away.
Gradual improvement.
And he'd end up winning with horses we would have thought, God, it shouldn't be in training. Mm. And he would get them horses to win. They're the horses that are hard to win with, but he showed me how to train a moderate horse.
That's the thing as well, Gerard, because if you're a 0-60 horse, the lowest grade, the races you're entered in, first of all, it's hard to get in because the most horses in Ireland are the worst. So basically, first of all, you have to get in, and then you'll rock up in Dundalk and it's a 14-runner handicap, or you'll go to Navan and it's a 20-runner handicap. And the horses of moderate ability, I think that's where trainers really make a show whether they're good or not, where they can get a moderate horse to produce, because you have so little in hand. And then to be able to improve them, and I think... anyone can train a good horse, but like a lot of trainers can train bad horses, and he obviously could.
Yeah, it opened my eyes actually. And the horses would always be kept, they would always look super, and they were always fresh and healthy, and everything was clean and tidy in the yard. And it set me up for training. I knew when I was going to go training, I'm going to base it on what I learned here.
The details of the bits that people kind of assume or take for granted or don't do.
Yeah, exactly. And
what was he doing though? How was he turning the...
I think the biggest thing back then was backward 2-year-olds, backward 3-year-olds. Mick would wait. He'd give them time to develop.
When you say backward, you mean they're born at the end of the year?
Yeah, we'll say they weren't fully developed.
Okay.
And he'd just keep chipping away when others might have casted them off.
That means just continuously training them but not producing them for races until they're ready?
Not going into fifth gear too soon. Okay. And gradually getting them there, next thing they're strong enough and they've got into a grade where they're able to compete and they can climb the ladder from the bottom rather than...
But say you have an owner, right? So you have a backward 2-year-old or a backward 3-year-old, but you have an owner who maybe he wants to see the horse run, or he wants to see something for his 1,200 quid a month or whatever it is. So how do you tell him, listen, I really would advise just taking your time with this horse, and the owner's like, well, I want to see my horse run, I want a day out, like.
Yeah, that's another side to the job, Johnny, to be honest. It's
diplomacy, like.
Yeah, it's another side to the job. It's hard to tell someone, I like your horse, but he mightn't see the winner's enclosure if he sees the winner's enclosure for 2 years.
Right.
It's a hard thing to do, but some of the old school owners that have been around for years, they know the job, and they'll take the good with the bad. Some will make it, some won't. Generally, if they've been through the mill, they know the run of it. But it's a hard one to deal with. Like,
do you speak in code, or do you just tell them the truth straight out? Do you like learn a language around this? Well, you know, this one here.
Be honest, Dennis.
It's a grower. He's a trier.
It's a tough job, actually. I was thinking about that today, actually.
How many horses do you get are no good?
God,
percentage-wise,
we go through plenty, to be honest, Johnny. It's hard to put a figure on it, but there's no good, there's moderate, and there's average. You know, moderate's a dangerous place because they're showing a hint of ability not to stop, but at the same time, they're going to put you in a dangerous area where you're finishing midfield, and the hint to win the race and the trip can't be figured out. They're generally not much good.
Right, and it's a waste of time. It's a waste of everybody's time.
But would you be the type of the owner that, like, listen, I'm not going to keep a horse unless...
We've been so lucky since I started with 5 horses. Every year we've had more and more horses offered to us, so we're always able to keep moving out the ones we don't want. Mm. Which it's great for the yard because we're constantly building up a stronger team of horses. Whereas if we were looking for numbers to keep, well, we'd probably try and keep going with lesser stuff. But it's great that we have a constant flow of youngsters coming and we're able to keep shipping out what we think won't make the grade. You know?
It's unfortunate that there are simply a lot of trainers who will keep moderate horses more or less to keep themselves afloat, really. Yeah. Like, and it's sad, and it probably shouldn't happen, but it's true, it does happen. And I think if you're an owner, you have to identify the trainer that will be honest with you, and we'll say from the get-go, this is basically, it's not worth your while.
Yeah, so what do you do in that case if you're an owner? So, like, stick
around. No, that's fine. You don't want, if you had 2 years, if you had 2 years of paying training fees for a moderate horse, you're talking 20 grand for something that's not worth tuppence, right? Yeah. So it's just like, listen, you might have lost 4 or 5 grand in this, but move on. You could pick up a horse for 3 grand that'll actually do a job, but I would advise that you move on. Do you know, and that's, I would appreciate that, honestly. Like,
yeah, for sure. Like at the end of the day, a moderate or no good horse is no good to me, my staff, or my owners.
Yeah.
Because he's only going to sour the owners off ever having a horse again.
Yeah.
The staff.
You end up looking bad because there's a hint of talent, but actually he can't deliver.
And to be honest, like, who wants to get up in the morning, the work that goes into them, to put that kind of work into a middle of the road to no good? It's a lot easier to get out of bed when you know they're decent, you know?
Yeah.
Without getting into the British-Irish kind of dichotomy, in Britain, you might be able to win with him. You won't in Ireland. It's just way too competitive. So then do you want to go over to England, hopefully win a bad race? The owner might back it. You're paying, obviously, transport fees for very bad prize money. So if you roughly, you go, an owner will get back 20% of what he puts in terms of prize money, in statistically or thereabouts. So that's like 80% obviously lost. So that's the reality of it. So nobody gets into owning racehorses with their eyes kind of closed. They know they're not going to make it. But with moderate horses, it's a lot worse than 80%. So you just get rid of it and move on.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's tough, but that's how it is, or should be.
Could we go back to the bit where you get your first job and then you move to the Curragh? You're a jockey, an out-and-out jockey at that point. You start as a flat jockey, is that right?
That's correct, Jerry. All I wanted to be was a jockey back then. But I did. It always interested me what the trainers were doing with horses and riding work for so many different trainers. You'd always be intrigued to know they'd all do something different.
Yeah.
And over the years, I always tried to, you took something from everyone, but you wrote a lot of work on something.
Can I ask you about that? The specifics of what they do differently? Because, it's kind of a bit secret, but it's not that secret what everybody does, really. Because, like, they're not doing, I don't know, it seems like nobody's actually reinventing the wheel. They just have their own little take, and some of it seems to be instinctive about the days when you put the horse in fifth gear and how close that is to a race.
Yeah.
And how you correlate that and how you produce them at the right moment. There's a bit of mysticism about it.
There is. Every outfit is nearly some bit different. I think if you find something that works for you, and you know, the first thing you have to do is get to know your gallops. So if once you get to know your gallops and what you can do and what leaves them with some left in the tank and not the race left at home, but equally has them fit enough to compete. I think once you know your gallops and your setup, you can work around it, you know. But every trainer does something different because their gallops vary, their horses vary. Some lads like to keep them fresh, do short and quick work. There's more trainers like to do loads of mileage and stamina.
There can be a massive difference by all accounts.
There is definitely. Yeah.
From one trainer to another. Like I heard of one trainer who gallops his horses over like a mile and a half, more or less, like proper slow galloping, where most trainers would probably work them quicker, but like they wouldn't go too fast, or they wouldn't go too far, rather, to keep them that bit fresh. Like, but I go back to that point about William Mullins. I remember talking about a horse one day this is a horse that was well exposed, and he said, I have him galloping today, I just want to see what I'm going to do with him trip-wise. And I was like, this horse has run 30-40 times, like it's all there in the racing post in front of you what he's done. And he was like, no, I just want to see him with my own eyes. And I was just like, that's Willie Mullins, because I think a lot of trainers are just like, well, I know what he is.
Yeah.
Willie wanted, and I don't think you can train that or you can teach that either, like, because he'll see something somebody else won't.
That's it, really. And like at the end of the day, I've seen it done every way. I've seen it done short, quick, loads of warming up, very little warming up.
Train them inside, outside.
I've seen them done in all sorts of ways. And at the end of the day, if the horse hasn't the engine,
yeah,
you can't bring him. Small stuff you can change, a couple of lengths here and there, but at the end of the day, I've seen it done everywhere, but you do need a level of ability. That's the biggest thing.
The horse needs a level
of ability. You do. Yeah.
And so once you've identified that and you see that the horse has that and you're confident that you can work with it, do you have a set routine that you use and that's your style and philosophy, or does that change depending?
Yeah, we generally have a routine where we have them in a pre-training yard for 6 to 8 weeks, depending on how they're going, but or breaking or whatever stage. And it works very well because we're not mixing them with the horses who have been, are in training and are racing. So, and everything in the main yard, my own yard, is up to near enough racing level. So they're all on the one page.
Okay.
So on a Monday, it's very steady away, and Tuesday, they're doing faster work and different swingers and half speeds. And Wednesday, we do a lot of school. And then Thursday, is nearly back around to Monday again. We step it up towards Friday's fast work, and Saturday they're just cantering. So,
and does it matter if there's a race imminent or not?
We try and work around runners, and Sunday mornings we'll just have the ones running very early in the week, Monday, Tuesday, that will actually ride out. So it varies a little, but we try and keep a routine.
Yeah.
How close to the race can you work them hard without damaging their prospects?
We've done it different with different horses. Mm. Stuffy horses who might need a blow the day before, or yeah. I've heard of evening meetings. Well, I have done it where evening meetings and a stuffy lad might have to get a blow that morning.
I remember Dermot Well telling me how he ran a horse in Laytown twice the same day years ago. Dermot only told me that because he did win one of the races now, but I couldn't believe it. He ran a horse twice in the same day. I think he finished first and third. But it's obviously different strokes, like.
Different for different horses. There's other horses who would like to hit the racetrack fresh and might have issues and just have to be produced fresh, and if you can't run them back quick.
Yeah.
And we just, it's trial and error, really.
You don't
find out until you go to war what's right or wrong for any horse. But the longer you have them, the more you should learn about them. But every day is a learning day. You know?
Yeah.
And Willie Mullins made an interesting point as well the other day, where he said, I don't care what the trip is for these horses in maiden hurdles and beginner's chase, I just need to get them out. So I was thinking, like, if you're a punter here and you're looking at, well, sure, Willie knows what the trip is for his horse. There was a horse running yesterday in Tremor, and I thought the trip would stretch him, and he ended up winning. Now, he did, he kind of just about lasted out, but that was in my mind, because Willie said that the weekend, doesn't care what the trip is this stage of season, he needs his horses to run in their maiden hurdles. So yeah, that could be 2 miles or 3 miles.
Just to get them fit.
Just to get them out, because the year we've had, the ground is still nearly good in Navan and Ferryhouse this weekend. This is nearly Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's most of the season is nearly gone at this stage. So it's like, well, what are we going to do here? We need to get these horses out. That's why Willie had like 3 or 4 horses in the maiden hurdle in Tremor yesterday, because he knew he was getting soft ground.
Yeah.
And he didn't really care what the trip was, and one of them won, the other one was second.
Yeah, they do have to get started at that stage too. We'd often be like that too, just get them started, and we know where in or around where there might be abouts, but we need to get them started on a racetrack to learn a bit, and for us to learn more too, just to bring them forward. They have to start somewhere, so
yeah.
I can see why Willie would pitch a few of them in. He has to get so many of them, they have to get out there. Mm.
It's like Jigginstown running 4 or 5, and they had a 1-3, 4-5 in a race recently. They just need to get the horses out, and they know all but one of them at least won't win.
Yeah. How many horses would you have in training at any one time?
We're upwards of 60 at the minute. We're probably going to have room for more in the new year. There's building going on again, and
right,
we've extended our gallops. We actually put in a whole new gallop this summer. We widened the gallop we had to double the width it was. It just allows us a bit more room on the bends, and we can work 4 horses together, or 3 or 4 horses together, and upsides. And
you work them both ways around.
Yeah, we can travel both ways, and We have the use of Charlie Swan's old gallops, where we have a grass gallop there, and we have an uphill school and strips, and just plenty of different facilities. But
are you a believer in schooling, or do you kind of let them learn at
the
track?
I think once we've got them off the ground and we've got them doing the basics and we've got them up to racing pace at home and they have had a run, a pop now and again, we don't overdo the school, and any time I have done, I've injured one. So
that's another thing. So Henry de Bromhead would have a totally different method of schooling than a lot of other trainers who like wouldn't hardly school their horse at all, whereas Henry would be like repetition, such that at the end of it the horse will go into the indoor arena and he'll do it himself.
Yeah.
He actually knows what he's doing himself. Like the cows being milked in the morning, who've been to the milking parlour so often, they'll just do it and they come from the field. But other trainers will be like, no, just I'd hardly school them at all, just let them learn at the track.
Henry's are actually a joy to watch, you know, like the rider doesn't have to do much only make sure he's...
They're on autopilot, like.
If they put them into the jumps right, they're generally, nine times out of ten, they're fairly good. But you can see that in the schooling. And another thing where you notice with Henry is that you see he seems to have a lot of good two-milers over the years. And I often see him dropping horses back to 2 mile and ride them forward and keeps it simple, and their jumping does the trick.
I'd say if you would gain a length at 10 fences, that's 10 lengths, and that's the win of a lot of races, like even over 2 miles, you know.
Because of the quality of the training.
Of the jumping. And to see a horse jumping, and like to see a horse like Mengli Khan, we'll say, when he met his Chase Fabio there lately, especially when they're doing it first time, and they just zoom past the horse over a fence, and it just looks like they're hurdling. It just looks so natural to them. That's the thrill of racing for me, like jumps racing. There's nothing like 2 mile horses going at speed. And if you can get up beside the fence yourself at the racetrack, it's exhilarating. And Patrick Mullins, even this week, he had a little video of him schooling at home, and this, it was like basically glasses video, like, so you could see exactly what he sees, and it was like, God almighty, that looks like so much fun. You know, within
you were tempted.
No, I wasn't, but I was like, that must be some crack over a fence, because this is only over hurdles, like, and this is only schooling.
Some crack if they can jump, Johnny. But that's so much
fun. Plenty of falls.
But which is the biggest thrill, the bit where you ride a horse to win, or the bit where a horse that you've trained and have seen develop and evolve gets past another horse at the finish line?
Of training myself.
Which is the biggest thrill?
You've told all the owners and the handicap hurdle in Sligo, and you get up by your neck. That's a help as well.
Exactly. When a plan comes together,
it doesn't matter if you're on board or not.
No,
or
it's known to be shrewd, you know.
Well, when a plan comes together, it makes the job worthwhile, you know.
But
we've had over the years, we've had plenty of good successes, like with low grade horses, even who, like, we've got as good a kick out of some of them as we do, as we do, we'll say a big graded winner or something. But like, you know, because them owners are, he's the same to them as a good horse is to another owner, you know.
Yeah.
So possibly even more, like, because that's all he has. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whereas Rich Ritchie has 50 horses.
Yeah, exactly. You
know,
yeah,
and most of them are grade one horses, like.
Yeah, so. For sure. But. Well, I suppose a horse that we thought plenty of over the years was Jack DeWire. He's retired now, actually, but he was a horse I thought I'd go a lot further now. But when he came together in Galway and onto Listowel, the family were there and they owned them. That was a memorable day.
It kind of goes back to the bit that we were talking about, where you can see the skill and work in training being made manifest in the results. That's like that's the dream for any manager, or
the work
culture
you've put in comes off.
Yeah.
It's a long road to get to where you want to, you know. Like, you could set out with, spend plenty of money at the sales and buy a nice horse to go forward with, and like, it mightn't come together for 2 or 3 years, but it could take that long for the real nice horse, you know?
The other thing, I suppose, that about all of this that sometimes we forget, because we're talking about, you know, we're talking about this as just a sport, but you put builders on site, you build stuff, make a significant investment. You're a businessman, really, at all this, and so you're juggling the sporting side of it as well as being an accountant and a HR manager and all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, it's like our place can be creative. Like this morning, it was very, very busy there. I actually couldn't wait to get out of it, because it was just like there was to come back from New York. Yeah, I was away, and there was like staff to deal with, there was builders there was farrier was in shoeing, the vets were there doing little jobs, and there was horses galloping, there was like orders to be done for different stuff, bedding, feeding, owners to be dealt with, staff to be dealt with.
You're like, I could have just been a jockey.
Transport to be organised to go racing, to go to the Curra galloping.
Listen, sorry, I have to go to Dublin and all the rest.
It's fairly wild, but at the same time, like, you know, when you've got through it in the day and next thing you have a winner, it's all, like, I actually really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I have a great team of staff. They get, when the going is tough, they get stuck in, and it's good to see, and it's good to see them rewarded too, you know.
Yeah. It sounds like you kind of always had that, when you talk about having the curiosity about what the trainers were doing, that's the type of thing that becomes infectious. Like, you can't put that away. You kind of want, at that point, when you think, I'm interested in what they're doing, you can't put that away. At some point, you're going to have to put the riding away, or will you? Like,
I do remember the training going well when I was 25 and thinking, God, well, I'm definitely going to ride till I'm 30 now, anyway, because it's going good.
Yeah.
And now I'm 31, so
40's not that far away.
I won't be going that far now. But look, at while it's going okay, I'll keep tipping away. But obviously, long term trend is what it's going to be all about.
And, yeah.
You said 15 other national hunt jockeys riding for you this season, which is.
Yeah, that's probably a bit more than normal.
A lot of amateurs as well, like.
Yeah, so. Actually, yeah, I picked the wrong one a few days.
You've had 138 rides. Shane Mulcahy will say has had 33. Andrew Ring, 13. And Paul Cawley, 7, and down from that.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, we've had so many runners now. Like, it's hard. I'm not worried anymore, but there's a time when you were like, don't want to miss anything, and you have to ride everything. But I look at it now more as a trainer. And thinking, if Davy Russell or Barry Geraghty or whoever, any of the top, there's loads of top jockeys out there,
yeah,
are available, put them up. And like the riding thing in Ireland as a national hunt, especially, is it's so hard for some of the lads. I'm friends with most of them in the weigh room, and like the amount of talent that's there, sitting in there every day, in every race. There's as much talent sitting in there with no good ride.
Yeah.
There's as much talent on moderate to no good horses at the back of the field. And it's like...
That's one of the hardest things about it.
It's tough. It probably sent me training, to be honest. I wanted Everton to... From the very start, I wanted to be champion jockey. I thought you could just turn up and...
Yeah.
I should be riding in every race. And you were getting disappointed if you weren't riding such a horse. And you'd see some of the top jockeys winning on them. And you're like, God, this is... depressing, like, but it probably started me off trend, and I was intrigued by the trend.
How old are you when you decided that, like, is this 22?
Yeah, I think I was about 22, and yeah. I took out a permit, and I was very lucky to...
Permit can have four horses in training at any one time.
I was very lucky. The parents owned it. We owned a few horses, and I said, I'll go and train them. I think three or four of them won that season and racked up a sequence, some of them.
Right. So that was... the break, really, that you needed. Because a lot of people would have been, 22-year-old jockey decides he wants to, I mean, am I going to trust this person with my horse?
Yeah, yeah.
But you actually got the opportunity to somebody who did trust you.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that the success comes from.
For sure. I've been very lucky with, I have some great owners at the minute. I've had some super owners over the years.
But there's one of them ringing you now.
Yeah, we'll give him a call back on the way home. that's another part of the game is actually, it's a whole other side to it as well. I could spend every hour of every day on the phone to owners. If, like, be fair, try to delegate a bit now, and my owners are very understanding. Like, some of them, they know I'm trying to juggle a lot, and to be fair, like, a lot of them drop me a message, what's happening, and I come back to them, or my secretary, or some of the lads in the air will update some of them, and I have a great bunch of owners. They trust me, and they let me at it, which is great, you know.
Yeah, it's been an amazing kind of just an insight into how busy you must be. You must be pretty good at managing your time, because like you've got about 12 different jobs.
And he likes a bit of hurling as well. Often see him in the park. Not so much this year. With Tip being pretty crap.
We'll be back next year, Johnny. Don't worry. You're only holding on to it there for a while. But
we don't have it anymore now.
Sorry. That's right. Yeah.
Limerick are only holding on. It's good to see racing people. A lot of them like can't see the wood from the trees, and that racing is racing, and racing is life. But it's good to see the likes of him and Noel Mead and Jim Bulger. You'll see them mad into the Gaelic Games in the summer as well. And Patrick Prendergast, we'd on lately, he went to the Ireland-New Zealand game and said he missed a couple of trains home. And it's great to see Ken Condon loves the hurling as well, and it's great to see that as well, because you can have the crack. That's, and it's probably a release as well. Like,
it's great to, like, yeah, it's something different. To just, like, as you said there, horses racing is 24/7. Like, there's, in the summer especially, there's racing nearly every day. It's, like, it's tough going, and the evening meetings... could be in the last race at 9 o'clock, and still have to be in the air at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, that was like, it seems like most trainers now have horses that are both flat and national hunter. It's definitely moving that way, that you can't just specialise in one anymore, because
you're
turning your back on a business, basically.
That's it, really, Ger. I find for us, the type of horse we have, we definitely do better from May back around to Listowel, where you can target all the summer festivals and lots of racing, the evening meetings. Horses that, we have a lot of horses that do both, and maybe go a mile and a half in the flat and they jump a hurdle as well.
Right.
It opens up a ton of doors for the owners. If they get too high under one code and the handicaps, they can turn to another something else, you know, and they might jump a fence in time.
Yeah.
Them type of horses have kept me on the road over the years, but still nice to have that winter horse who can go through the mud in a graded race.
That people fall in love with.
Yeah.
They're, especially in Ireland.
Yeah. And the last couple of years, actually, we've had a couple of really good flat horses, sprinters even, Titanos, Turbine, Allegio, Inishman. Like, they've, like, if I was just a jumps trainer and hadn't targeted them, like, they won premier handicaps, and there's a lot of good money on the flat handicaps. Like, there's plenty of 50, 100 grand races, you know.
And it's like it's a lifetime career now for you. If you want it to be, you can train all the way up until you're 80s. That's how it's going to go. But no harm keeping those options open. Will you stay with us and we'll talk about the weekend's racing?
You must be well on top of this now after being
here. Yeah.
Hopefully you're on the Wi-Fi on the plane on the way home, which is a great boon these days when you're on a 7-hour flight and you can actually just go online. I know it's sad, but it's...
But then the WhatsApp start arriving and you're like... I made the mistake. It's like the blue ticks.
Sarah kept saying to me for the whole week,
Sarah?
I my girlfriend Sarah, she said,
I was
on this mobile data all week, and first 2 days, and she's like, I was like, does that cost money? And she's like, yeah.
I got badly stung for that before on the plane, but the last time I came back from New York, the Wi-Fi went down after an hour, and I was just like, no, and I was just about to tell them to turn the plane off and turn it on again, see who we go. I can't have 6 hours in a flight. Like, that's just how. Anyway, kind of sad.
We got a big phone bill, all right?
Yeah. Oh, the phone bill's going to be a disaster unless you topped it out. Competition time. The Irish Racing Yearbook 2019 is available in all good bookshops for €24.95, which includes a whopping €1,250 worth of free admission to more than 70 race meetings throughout 2019. So the price of purchase is returned over 50 times. To avail of an offer for free postage and pre-Christmas delivery, just order your copy at irishracingyearbook.com by December the 19th. You've got a piece in it?
I have, with Billy Lee, who sure has ridden for you a few times.
Billy has ridden winners for me, top man.
Really good rider. Another lad who could conceivably be basically a top rider somewhere else. Just he's decided to stay in Ireland, and he's just probably slightly below in terms of the opportunity he's gotten. He's ridden in one Group 1 winner maybe, but great guy from Limerick, and it's well worth buying that. There's loads of features in it.
We've got three copies to give away to anybody who drops us a comment on any of our streams or retweets the stream, and we'll close that competition tomorrow, so you've got an opportunity if you're watching this a little bit later on as well to just retweet the stream, and we'll be in touch with the winners hopefully in time for Christmas. He said, promising something that he can't guarantee he could deliver on. There you go.
I believe you.
That'll learn me to shut up. Right, there, we're going to start with Navin. Will we start with your bet this week?
Start with Cheltenham. Should we start with maybe...
Right, let's start with Cheltenham. The Caspian Caviar Gold Cup Handicap Chase.
Yeah, so it's the same course and trip which did the Bet Victor Gold Cup exactly 4 weeks ago. And... Guitar Pete is very interesting for me. Desi Hughes used to train him. Desi's probably a few years past now, but this horse is ace. It's kind of hard to believe. Desi had him. I think Sandra may have had him. He's come to Nicky Richards, and he won this race last year, and that's always a massive plus in the Cheltenham race. But I was just looking at this before I came on. Nicky Richards, the trainer, his last 7 runners going into today, 6 of them had won. And that's, in any man's language, like, that's pretty impressive. So he ran a nice prep for this in that aforementioned race. There's a kind of a renewal of rivalry here. Rother B fell travelling well in that race, and a lot of people will definitely lump on him. But he's only 3-1, and I think he'll run a big race, Guitar Pete.
Okay. Okay, so that was 155.
That's
on
the 150
Saturday.
Fortunately, it's only 15 runners, which means 3 places rather than 4. But look out for bookmakers who'll pay 4 places.
2:30 at Cheltenham, the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle.
Yeah, it's again, I don't think we've any Irish runner in the race, which is a little bit disappointing. But I think Supremely Lucky could be interesting here. Dan Skelton is another trainer who's apparently his facilities are unbelievable. He's come from a bit of a racing background, but he's a young trainer. Obviously himself and his brother Harry. It's not like Roy the Rovers, where Roy the Rovers, he was the manager and the player. You're doing both, but the Skelton team, the brothers.
Yeah, super job.
Yeah, the Skeltons are getting, like, they're kind of like Gordon Elliott now, in that they get an awful lot of horse from other yards, and the betting straight away presumes that the horse is going to improve like two stone. That doesn't always happen, but he's an excellent up and coming trainer. I think supremely lucky, bolted up at Sud the last time, well bred horse. He's probably a bit of value in the race.
I think they are a super outfit, Dan and Harry. Like, you see Harry, I've been in England a few times riding, and he's so focused and so dedicated, and I think he's a top class rider. I think it works really well that they obviously their family, they get on
together. Or not,
I'm sure they have plenty of words.
They're honest with each other.
But they definitely are a good combination.
Do you have to be completely obsessed with how all of these races are happening and how each of these horses is performing, so that you know when to enter and when not to, and how to manage your season?
That's another part of the job as well. Actually, we get a bit of help with that from one or two, but that's another part of the job there. Like, it's like,
you pick the wrong race and you go up against the wrong horses.
It's very easy to place a low grade horse because generally they work from week or month to month.
Right.
You know, it's very easy to place them ones and where they can get in. But when you have a middle to decent, you know, sortie, like, you have to make a plan then.
Yeah.
And generally, before they come off grass, you have a long term plan and work back.
The other thing is, so for when the declarations are coming in before 10 o'clock, you're online and you can see with every refresh of the button how many are in the race. So then you're like kind of last minute, oh, it's only three, happy days, you load in and six other people are thinking the same thing, so they're actually nine runners now or 10 runners.
I think actually I hit the office around after second lot most mornings, 9:30. I can't leave there till 10:05 really. And just refreshing and making sure everything is done right and going through the programme for the entries. Then I'm back in for 12 o'clock, just keep an eye on that as well.
To get horses in or to see what other horses
are
in the race?
Yeah, you'd be just keeping an eye on different things. But it's very hard to, even while I was away this week, while I know they had everything done at home and just...
You're checking.
You're still checking to see an angle where there might be a small field or don't want to miss anything. You know?
Yeah, but there's 6 million horses. How do you keep up to date with how everything's going?
Yeah, well, I let whatever's going on in someone else's yard, but just looking after our own bunch, literally, I'm well known for declaring horses at 9:59.
They must love you in HRI, do they?
Yeah, I think they know, like, that it could change my mind, like, six times between 5 to 10 and 10 o'clock.
Sound like Willie Mullins.
I just, like, it is hard. That's actually one of the hardest parts of the job, mentally.
Because you second guess yourself,
and then the phone is ringing about other things, and you're wondering. And then, like, it's good to get a bit of advice. Lately, in the last year or two, I'd often ask different jockeys, different work riders, even different lads in the air or owners that I know are clued into the form. What do you think?
Is this?
And I might still do something opposite, but yeah, still helps.
Delegate.
It does sound like that whole process of stepping back from rides and realizing that there's loads of other talented jockeys out there as a trainer. Massive. That you just become more mature as this thing goes on. Yeah. That, like,
I love using some of the lads sometimes, just for a bit of feedback.
In your 20s, you can be a control freak about stuff. In your 30s, you kind of start to realize, actually, you know what? There's a whole world of other people that can be the hive mind.
No, it's so good to get a bit of different feedback. And as well as that, like, what you might think is right mightn't necessarily always be the right, you know.
Well, there you go. That's an important piece of the 3:05 at Cheltenham on Saturday. This is another small field, is it?
Eight, yeah. This is a race that was crying out for Laurina, who probably will be close to or every bit as good as Quivega and Annie Power, mare for Willie Mullins. She has to take on the boys, which off the top of my head she hasn't done yet, or at least she hasn't done it in meaningful company. They have a programme for mares now that makes them kind of, the good ones can mop up races. But she doesn't run, unfortunately, in this race. Willie, I think he said the ground is just putting him off. And it's strange because some of the tracks in even Sandown last Saturday looked proper testing. Tremor looked pretty testing yesterday, but Cheltenham is good. So I think that's why he said he didn't run, and this is a race of full of doubtful sorts, really. Brain Power has had more problems than the three of us probably put together, and he's still, I don't know, he's back over hurdles now anyway. Vision de Flow used to be Robert Tyner, interesting horse, up and coming. We Have a Dream has been a little bit disappointing this season. And then you have Somerville Boy, who really was disappointing last. He ran behind Sam Crow and Bouverdere. I'm going to tip him up. He won the Supreme last year, but not with any confidence. It's not a betting race for me.
Yeah, okay. So we've a couple of other quick races to talk about, the Tara Handicap Hurdle and the Navan Hurdle at Navan on Sunday. But we do actually, it is time for us to get our tip in. We're aiming to add to the €1,485 that we have for the Irish Interjockeys Fund so far with this week's charity bet from thetote.com. You can get Tote's best price guarantee on all Irish racing this weekend. See thetote.com for more. Last week's pick, Forge Meadow, didn't do the business at Cork, is what it
says.
Very
disappointing.
We've got another €100 to try again, though, this week. Your bet is in Fairy House on Saturday, and it's Alpha Indy.
It is. It runs in the 3 o'clock. And I mentioned about the Skeletons, where they get a horse from another yard, and there's a general expectation that they'll improve them. And you're a bit of a victim of your own success, I think, in this regard, because everyone just expects that. And it's like a failure if you can't improve the horses, where the horse just might have plateaued. But I'm thinking Alpha Indy might actually be able to improve for the switch Scornelli. He's a 7-year-old going on 8. His first run was in a point-to-point in Ballyarthur. Where is that?
Ballyarthur's in Cork, I think, is it?
A lot of point-to-points in Cork. I'm not actually familiar with that track. But he was second to Nicole's Milan, who would be a fairly solid, reliable yardstick. And this is not a good race. And Gordon has entrusted Jack Kennedy for the ride. The horse was trained in Britain by a guy called, H.J. Evans. I actually don't know who that is, to be honest. He doesn't have a bad strike rate, but you'd imagine Gordon should be able to just improve him a little bit. And his mark has come down. And I think this horse is crying out to be backed. If not today, keep the faith and back him the next day.
Okay, so keep an eye on him for the rest of the season.
But I definitely back him tomorrow, 3 o'clock at Fairy House. You might lose, but there's every chance this horse will be a well-back winner.
Okay, so let's go to Navan then on Sunday. The other final two races that we're going to talk about today, the Navan Novice Hurdle at 12:30 and the Tara Handicap Hurdle. So what type of horses are in the Novice Hurdle at Navan on a Sunday?
Well, this is, to give you an example, Oscar's Well, Boston Bob, Paulton Alexander, Briar Hill, No More Heroes, Bell's Hill, Death Duty, Next Destination. I think they were all grade one winners. If not, all bar one of them won a grade one. I've no doubt that Rhinestone will... Well, I think Rhinestone is the best of these long term. McManus horses can be campaigned a bit with a view to Cheltenham in that. Like, he trains them. Like, JP would prefer a handicap winner at Cheltenham, I think, than winning a grade two at Navan on Sunday. Fair enough. I suppose I'd like a winner at Galway more than anywhere else to a degree, because that's where I'm from. Like, but in any event, I think Rhinestone is very exciting going forward. His trainer, Joseph O'Brien, like, the last month has been just unbelievable for him. The amount of winners is just left, right and centre. There was one Dundalk going into a jumps meeting the following day where
he had five or six winners
between in the space of sort of 20 hours in completely different codes. Now I know he has the resources, but he's also getting horses from other trainers and improving them. So like I know everyone will say, like, so Dunica was asked, what's your best asset? And he said, being Aidan O'Brien's son. And that was like a typical Dunica jibe at, like, he's privileged. Joseph's privileged, but he's actually well able to train and he has the facilities. I think Rhinestone's very exciting and I will put him forward with the proviso that he might be trained to peak at Cheltenham.
Okay, so that's Rhinestone on Sunday at 12:30 in Navan. And then the 1 o'clock, it's a much bigger field, 22 runners in the handicap hurdle.
Dennis, do you want to give the winner of this? You've done your homework.
God, I see. Well, I suppose it's not light for Ruby, but he's doing 10-6, but that's not light for him, actually. He'd do 10 stone if you had to, but...
Callie Dumaneel,
yeah. Just never discount one of Willie's with a lightweight and a handicap. And Ruby's picked this one, I think, to have a few in it, have they?
This horse is interesting because it ran behind its stablemate Pleasure Dome at Galway, and it was a rare example of two horses from the one stable basically having a scrap in the middle of the race and losing the race for
away
one
in
of
the west. Away
yeah,
in the west.
Yeah, so away in the west, Barry Geraghty rode that. Probably couldn't believe his luck because he was on a horse that really shouldn't have won, but because the other two basically
a long way out there,
they slugged it out. And I'd say it was Paul Townend, and I don't know, is it Danny or David? But I'd say they must have had words afterwards. They said, well, whoever was at fault here, this shouldn't have happened. But anyway...
But is that not just what happens?
But you can't, like...
it's grand. You shouldn't give a horse a soft lead because then he has his way up front. But in Galway, if you're racing against each other a mile out, it's probably like running a marathon and going like in the middle of the marathon, going like an 8 mile race pace, like where you're going to be just banjoed by the end of it. And that's what happened here. But one of those horses was Calidou Menil. So
I see Ball Dark in the same race, Donny. He's running off 18
must be
pound.
Very well in.
He is, but doesn't always work that way. They have him in his favour, but like...
He has a mare, right, that basically... This is one of the biggest flops of a trainer you will ever get. She was basically like over fences, this mare. You can't call her that.
40, was she? 142, was
140. She was basically like, if you wanted to call her, she's run...
She won a grade two. Yeah
so she's say, if we're going to bring it to divisions in the NFL in Gaelic football, she's probably... comfortable in Division 1, and then she drops back to Division 4 over hurdles and she's not able to win. And why is that?
She won a point to point, which are basically over fences, as a 4-year-old, 4 turn of 5. She could have been sold, and half the syndicate wanted to sell, half didn't. They left it up to me. I said not for that money, and brought her home that season. She couldn't win a hurdle race off high 80s, 90, 91 or 2 maybe. Put her away for the summer, disillusioned, brought her back, won her at a chase, finished second, won the next day, won 5 I think last season, must have won over 100,000 and won a grade 2 and a listed black type.
From being basically probably no good.
But her handicap hurdle rating remained, which was now £50 inferior. So she started in Wexford this year. I think she was 1-2, Johnny. Was
4-6.
4-6 she went off. Now, possibly needed that run. She finished second, beaten ahead. Looked a good opportunity for her in Cork last week, but 2.5 miles around a flat track. She was actually on her head most of the way and doesn't jump a hurdle like she springs a fence.
Right. It's amazing the difference. It's amazing.
She's just a 3 mile national hunt mare that hurdles are just happening. Everything's happening faster.
Yeah. It's almost like... there's thought as opposed to it being in the flow state.
Yeah, I've seen it over and over though, but never a gap like that sounds a lot. Like
it's incredible.
£50 sounds like you should, like you will win, but
yeah,
I have seen £30 turned over and over. You probably have too.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. It's just it's a different discipline, like, because you're going quicker and you're probably quite cumbersome over your hurdles as well because you're just not used to jumping them.
Yeah,
and again, if you're going over a shorter trip, obviously that just makes it a lot harder. But it is surprising. I tipped her last Sunday, but I wasn't surprised she was beaten either because I've seen it so many times. I'd back a horse well in over fences relative to his hurdle mark any day of the week. But if you're backing a horse that's theoretically thrown in because of what he's done over fences, it's just not the same over hurdles. They're often they're often outpaced quite
just
quickly as well.
Horses,
yeah, just too big for that job.
Back to this, you don't like, or it sounds like you'll be concerned about the short price and a horse like Baldark just on the basis of that, and you do like Calidou Menil this time. Is that fair?
PJ Vaughan riding for Gordon on Baldark, do you know anything about him?
I can't say.
Yeah, so he must be another new up-and-come rider, Damon 5. Calidou Menil is very interesting. I would say as well, Elusive Theatre for Stuart Crawford, who own Malone Road, or certainly train Malone Road, and Gordon got Malone Road, who's the most exciting bumper horse probably in Ireland this season, for a few seasons maybe, the Crawford Elliott switch. But Elusive Theatre isn't badly handicapped. She'll be a big prize.
All right, good stuff. Dennis, thanks for joining us. You're en route to Dundalk for a few.
We've 3 runners.
Give us a winner now for the Christmas.
I've only one solid chance, to be honest. Aminat, you'll probably know.
Get the six.
Horse, I think he will. He's got 5 3/4 at Navan, running on over 5 last week. Not certain to be honest, Johnny, but at the same time, drawing 7 of 8 is not ideal either. But he drops in and he arrives late and he's in good nick. He'll be close, but he'll need a bit of luck to win.
All right, good stuff. Thanks
winner
for
Christmas?
Winner for Christmas. He's asking all the questions, isn't he, Ger?
Trying to promote the show.
Philly ran very well last weekend in defeat. I was thrilled with her. Even though we had a winner last weekend, I was really thrilled with My Henna over the wrong distance behind Willie Smith.
Last weekend.
You tipped up Jesse's in the same race.
The beginners, the chase.
Grade 3, yeah.
She made all the running after she was...
The
horse that won the previous day when Townend, I don't know how he won it. She's a French name.
That's right, yeah. So Moyhenna will go somewhere at Christmas, and we'll be hoping for the best.
We'll keep an eye on Moyhenna then. Yeah. Good stuff, Dennis. Thanks very much for that, Johnny. Thank you as well.
Thanks.
Anytime, Joe.
That is the end of Friday Night Racing this week. Hope you enjoyed it as ever. You can drop us a text or a comment wherever you're watching this live, or of course you can text the radio show on 53106, and we'll pick that up as well. Don't forget to enter our competition as well, and we'll see you next week. Good luck.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.